Okay, so you might be wondering why I'm standing here and talking to you about manufactured consent instead of informed consent. There are many reasons, but one of them is the change I've noticed in how the medical system attempts to get people to behave and conform. You would think, as with other medical procedures, that solid science would be at the core of patient information consent. The reality is that the choices you make medically have never been on the basis of informed consent. In 2015, informed consent is even less likely to happen than it would have been 10 or even 30 years ago. In 1997, the World Health Organization formulated a strategy, which was put into a book called The Strategic Plan, which laid out a map to completely change the way people thought about vaccines. The plan had key points, which were using the media to structure messages that shaped public opinion to co-opt or persuade key opinion people in all levels of society, medical, lay, and entertainment, to get pro-vaccine spokespeople at every level conveying one message and one message only. This plan emphasized private-public partnership and philanthropy with the aim to make vaccines a core topic in society. Anyone who reads this book can clearly see that this was a plan which would result in what I would call a slow cooking of human frogs from cold water, hopefully that we wouldn't even notice what was happening, to get us all to a point where we could see nothing else other than the dogma. Part of that plan came to fruition in a big way when Bill Gates stepped up to take his place in the World Health Organization plan. Everybody know who Bill Gates is? Okay. People who are part of this plan are called stakeholders, not just by me, but it's an acceptable term. Private stakeholders have existed for the last 20 years, but never more obviously than in 2015. The whole public face of vaccination has changed, and a large part of that change has been due to the involvement of private individuals. In 2010, the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation donated $10 billion, with a B, dollars, US dollars, to make 2010 to 2020 the decade of vaccines. When this announcement was made in 2010, when I was just starting to wake up to the issues with vaccination, I had no concept of what $10 billion could do. But today, with that plan in action, with all that money, the vaccine stakeholders have planted flags everywhere, with some startling results. In 2015, the focus in the United States was on making vaccines mandatory for all people, and they were successful in some places, making vaccines a lifestyle event for all people from cradle to grave, and broadening the appeal of live viral vaccines for their immune system benefits, not just for their disease-preventing benefits. The World Health Organization's strategic plan was printed first in 1993, and then it was updated in 1997. And it morphed into the global immunization vision and strategy, which Bill Gates often makes reference to in his publicity. And you can see it right here in that last paragraph, the Global Alliance. Today we have a computer software billionaire, the pharmaceutical industry, academia, and the US Department of Homeland Security, and the World Health Organization all speaking and working in unison towards the same goals. These alliances should have anyone who listens and watches asking lots of questions. Because the goals are to restrict our health freedom, to censor what we read and can say, and remove our ability to choose what goes into our bodies. 2015 will be remembered by those who pay attention as one of unprecedented activity in the war against a new public menace, the vaccine hesitant. What we saw was a Disneyland spectacle where about 140 people were infected with measles. Shortly after that, we had a surge of media outlets and the CDC making announcements with half-truths, and California losing its ability to make conscientious objections, philosophical objections. We have ongoing state battles, many of which have been overturned. And you probably don't hear about that, but there have been a lot of success on the basis of informed parents and honest politicians. So don't give up hope. We have an ongoing lawsuit with two virologists that were formerly employed by Merck Pharmaceuticals, Merck Vaccines, who are suing them on the basis of fraudulent testing of the mumps portion of the MMR vaccine. And that's part of this whole thing that we're seeing. And that lawsuit is continuing. The Department of Justice ruled this year that it will go ahead and they will continue the lawsuit. We had a fellow, who I'll talk more about in a bit, named William Thompson. We called a whistleblower because he came out and he said, you know, there was a collusion for these four scientists that I worked with and myself to cover up data that showed higher autism rates in African-American boys. But then he went quiet. And now we're seeing censorship of any anti-vaccine views, even of delaying vaccines or altering the schedule at all, and portrayal of refusers as insane and obstinately stupid. And we're seeing whole new propaganda, which is going to be the focus of most of my talk today, which centers around a very important medical paper that came out in 2015, which underlies a lot of what's happening here and reinforces the goals. So here is some of what the popular press had to say. Forbes magazine, has anyone heard of Forbes magazine? Yeah. Forbes magazine puts it bluntly. This was published August 4th, 2015. And it says, scare the crap out of anti-vaccine parents. But remember, in order to do that, they have to restrict information. Because when doctors and parents have all the facts and make the connections between their children's sickness and vaccines, they want to know more. And they'll start looking for themselves. So in order to plug holes in the dam that's beginning to crack, journalists also have to be censored. Dr. Paul Offit, have you heard of him? He's a figurehead pro-vaccine doctor in the USA who makes recommendations to doctors and advisory panels. Says that journalists who discuss or print anti-vaccine fact should be jailed. Most journalists are now terrified to say anything that could lose sponsorship. But the few who are still interested in balanced discussions must be censored, according to not just Paul Offit, but Kathleen Sebelius, the US Secretary of the Department of Health and Human Services, who served from 2009 to 2014. But in 2010, this is a pretty famous little magazine in the United States, you might have it here, she stated that the media outlets should not give equal views to vaccine critics. This has long been the ethos, though, even when the evidence and arguments are well-founded. As stated in this Federal Register from the Department of Health and Human Services from 1984, any possible doubts, whether or not well-founded, about the safety of the vaccine cannot be allowed to exist. Doesn't get more plain language than that. And here it is right here. This is just a copy of it from 1984. The open threats to non-vaccinators recently reached out in every possible direction. Doctors are under threat everywhere. But in the USA, journalists who parrot misinformation call for us to have our licenses revoked. Vaccination is a medical no-brainer, don't you know? And a public health home run. According to Peter Lipson, well, Roman and I, in Dissolving Illusions, put some serious gashes into that fallacy of vaccination being a no-brainer and a public health home run. But Lipson places vaccination alongside clean water and fluoridation, of all things. He's totally ignorant of the fact that clean, non-fluoridated water was indeed one of the major public health successes, and that vaccination has wrongly hijacked its credit. And that fluoride, just like aluminium, has no important role in the human body. But then he goes through a long diatribe, and he winds up his arm, and he punches out at doctors, saying that any doctor dissent should be met with investigation, warnings, suspended licensing, and He's thought about this a lot. 150 hours of propaganda brainwashing. This type of Chairman Mao ballistic stupidity is right up there with Forbes' other article that was put on the cluster fire in January of 2015. In the most highly vaccinated era ever, the growing sentiment is to sue non-vaccinating parents. Isn't this irrational? Because in every outbreak of measles in history, there have been large chunks of vaccinated people who became infected and had the capacity to spread measles to others. Should we sue them as well? Perhaps we should sue everyone. Or perhaps we should sue the dead government officials who sanctioned a measles vaccine program in 1963 with the goal to eradicate measles in the United States by 1967 with just one measles vaccine to some of the children, because nothing they predicted came true. Today, not only are all children getting two shots, but adults like myself are being told to revaccinate because our vaccines have worn off. There's an obvious problem when we see the proportion of infected people from California. In the pre-vaccine era, 95 to 99% of people had lifelong immunity to measles by the age of 15. And infants and less than one-year-olds almost never got infected by measles. But look how many less than one-year-olds and over 20-year-olds were infected in that California outbreak. 11% were less than 1 year old. That almost never happened before the vaccine, because naturally immune mothers provide stronger and longer transplacental antibody to protect that baby. Look at how many greater than 20-year-olds were infected, 56%. Again, that would have not happened before the measles vaccines were instituted, because these are the people whose vaccines have worn off. Okay, unless they're not vaccinated, these are the people whose vaccines have worn off. So you're not supposed to know any of this. You're just supposed to believe that vaccines are your responsibility and good for your child and everyone else too. And they say, while it may seem mean to give a two-month-old baby six vaccines in one day, it's actually kind. In the past, parents could just quietly opt out of vaccines, but today, parents have to justify themselves more than ever. Thinking and doing your own research is discouraged, and most people just go right along with it. When it comes to vaccines, history is perceived as the greatest judge of success. The pro-vaccines say that because some vaccines were so good, that all vaccines in the future must be even better. They tell a vaccine history which only admits to a few minor glitches, just to make you think that they're being transparent. Yet when you look deeper, lots of skeletons fall out of lots of closets. Most of the vaccine history given to the public is carefully cherry-picked data that rarely mentions anything nasty that happened in the real world related to vaccination. So it's much easier to bury one's head than to face the uncomfortable truth. Most people just want reassurance that what they believed and did was the right thing and not based on any fallacies. The result? Compliant people with sick children regularly running to the doctor, getting vaccines, and filling prescriptions. Doctors and parents now think that 9 antibiotic prescriptions in the first year of life is normal. They have no idea what a really healthy child looks like. As a medical doctor specializing in nephrology, which is kidneys, for nearly 2 decades, and as a vaccinator and prescription writer, it looked like sickness normally started in adulthood to me. In my pediatric rotations decades before, I saw what normal was then, but 20 years later, what's considered normal is a lot sicker than it was back then. Even worse, I now see the pediatric kidney failure population increasing rapidly. Parents notice their kids get sick after vaccinations, and they're tired of hearing that it was just coincidence. In my last 10 years, I lived in a state in the United States where a relatively high number of people did not vaccinate. That allowed me to see children who were shockingly vibrant and healthy. They hardly ever got sick, and when they did, they got over it quickly. Those parents rarely needed a doctor. They nursed their children back to health without the usual blunt weapons of antibiotics and fever reducers. After I left the medical system, I looked more closely at why those children were so healthy. And I became frustrated that the medical system does not focus more on healthy children when they see them for school physicals, because that's just about the only time they see them, unless they fall down and cut themselves or break a bone, whereupon they're berated for not being vaccinated instead of having the problem dealt with. Those doctors should be asking, what are these parents doing right to have this level of health? Why are they different? Most of you are here today because what you see or what you have experienced doesn't line up with the message of the system. You don't want to live with your head in the ground. So what do? When doctors and health officials define good as meaning compliant, there are articles which state that the never vaccinated children are rarely seen in the system. But that's usually attributed to parental distrust of the system rather than lack of need. It's hard for the pro-vaccine to concede that never vaccinated children rarely actually need the system. But that's certainly what I've witnessed. When non-vaccinators are kicked out of the office, doctors then turn around and say that the other forms of healing that those parents turn to are quackery, dangerous, can kill you because you aren't using their medicine. Well, fortunately, many intelligent parents see that the medical system is fear-mongering. Some parents today have great-grandparents who laugh when measles is called something more dangerous than Ebola. I've noticed that once parents have enough knowledge and experience, they no longer feel doctor-dependent because they realize how easy it is to not need doctors. And this works so long as parents have the freedom to choose. And the medical system knows that, which is why they're now turning up the heat. While non-vaccinating parents are treated with disdain, what happens when a previously compliant parent wakes up and asks this simple question? Why did all these problems start after those vaccines? The doctor automatically rejects the connection. If the parent persists in their questioning, rejection becomes disdain and hostility. The angry doctor may call them paranoid, neurotic, stupid, unqualified, hysterical, or dangerous. I've been treated with that same hostility and told that I have blood on my hands. What critics choose to ignore is that my decades within the hospital system, I willingly signed vaccine orders and gave them myself, believing that I was preventing sickness. It came as a total shock to me when I started to realize that vaccines I administered were causing serious health issues in my patients. I understand the doctor's viewpoint. I had a choice. I could either tell my patients that their suspicions were coincidence or do a really thorough case review while researching on PubMed. I chose to fully investigate and to support my patients instead of protecting my ego, my position, my pride, or my bank account. And after 6 years of solid research in PubMed literature, looking at information which was never given to me when I was educated within the system, I can see that when I was a vaccinator, I had inadvertent blood on my hands. Science and logic have brought me to where I am today. Everything I say is right there in the medical literature. Yet academia would rather shoot the messenger than discuss the message or consider the sickness record of vaccinated children. I don't have a vaccine-injured child. This isn't personal for me. So why would I give up a highly paid job and an excellent reputation just to talk about vaccines? Why would I continue to research this controversial subject just to be subjected to the hostility that I am? A few years ago, I stood back to make a scientific analysis of the big picture. And that's when I discovered that the medical system sometimes tolerates independent thinking, but they don't encourage anything that disturbs the status quo. We are told the science is settled on everything vaccine. But as I compared the so-called evidence with the historical and scientific literature, it became clear that the education given to me and to doctors today is an oppressive form of religion, preached as gospel by leading authorities who act as if their narrow truth is the only righteous belief. Explaining the broader concepts as I'm doing today is to them akin to heresy, even if it's right there in their peer-reviewed medical journals. when you see one of the foremost pro-vaccine priests proclaiming a long-lost 11th commandment to doctors on an online tutorial, you should consider that it's more than just a joke. This was the Medscape tutorial sponsored by Merck that I got that slide from. The edicts that are dictated from on high sometimes take my breath away. Dr. Poland, who did that PowerPoint, is well-loved among vaccine stakeholders. And he also gave this pearl of nonsense, which is frightening, coming from the editor of Vaccine Journal, saying, "I like to say it this way. You can think of influenza and rubella vaccines as anti-autism vaccines." I didn't put those words in his mouth, I just wrote them there. As a vaccine researcher and part of the think tank at Mayo Clinic, Dr. Poland must be well pleased with the latest changes made to Google. You might not be aware of this, but Mayo doctors like him now determine for Google what is vaccine fact and what is vaccine fiction. It's a desperate measure to silence those who question vaccines and find information that's not permitted on mainstream media. The increased clamor must be shaking the very foundations of so-called settled science. Intelligent parents will seek alternative sources of information when they see Paul Offit, the Pope of settled science, making outrageously unscientific claims in an attempt to calm down parents who are wary of the aluminium in infant vaccines. He has taken the safety message to a ludicrous level of ignorance, claiming that aluminium plays an important role in the development of a healthy fetus. I've gone into detail criticizing this with all of the science backing me up on other YouTube talks. He bases this on the following, and I only took a few excerpts from the nonsense that's on his website, but he says, during healthy pregnancies, the amount of aluminium in a woman's blood increases. The blood of premature infants has more aluminium than that of full-term infants. The breast milk of moms with premature infants contains more aluminium than that of moms who carried their babies to term. How does that sit with you? These statements are deceptive and completely unscientific. What's actually happening with aluminium blood levels during pregnancy is that aluminium and lead, actually, which was previously stored in the mother's bone, is being mobilized in order to release minerals to the baby. Just because higher levels of aluminium are found in premature babies doesn't mean that aluminium is beneficial. It could mean that it's causing harm. Aluminium is likely a cause of preterm birth, not evidence that aluminium is normal. Preterm birth is a definite sign of poor health, and Paul Offit's own references that he uses to support this nonsense prove him wrong. And I also went through that in Oslo, Norway this year. It's hard for me as a doctor to take anything he says seriously when he comes out with statements like this. But his aluminium nonsense doesn't stand alone. Offit will also reassure any parent who is concerned about too many vaccines with a straight face that their infant can tolerate 10,000 to 100,000 vaccines at once. And again, this is the article where he writes it, and here's just another evidence of that. He's a vaccine inventor, if you don't know that. He's granted a position in medicine to decide what vaccines your baby gets, what the laws regarding vaccine refusal should be, and whose voice is the right one to listen to. He's also a defender of the autism research done by this man, who you might recognize because he's walking around your streets today. He's listed by the U.S. Office of Inspector General as one of their most wanted healthcare fugitives. This photo is of Dr. Paul Thorsen, one of Denmark's top scientists and the principal investigator of the CDC-funded Danish research that is used to counter arguments from families claiming their children suffered vaccine injuries, including autism. These studies are used by the U.S. government and vaccine stakeholders to deny financial compensation and any possible connection between vaccines and autism. This is the copy of his arrest warrant by the United States Department of Justice, filed in 2011 for felony violations. It says on there, not in custody. That's because he's living in Denmark and fully employed, apparently $2 million richer. Supposedly, he is waiting extradition to the United States. But it seems that the USA is altogether unmotivated to follow through on this arrest warrant. But let's look for a moment at the charges against Thorson from the Office of Inspector General of the United States America's website. It says, in April 2011, he was indicted on 22 counts of wire fraud and money laundering, that he stole grant money, that he diverted over $1 million U.S. dollars to his bank account using fraudulent invoices. With that, he purchased a home in Atlanta, Georgia, a Harley-Davidson motorcycle, an Audi automobile, and a Honda SUV. If he's convicted on all counts, he could face up to 260 years in prison and $22.5 million in fines. Well, much to my surprise, Dr. Thorson is still publishing medical articles. Recent studies from 2014 and 2015 list him as employed at the Department of Obstetrics and Gynecology at Lillebælt Hospital in Kolding, Denmark. Since his indictment in April 2011, his name has appeared on 20 research papers listed in PubMed. This doesn't look like a man in hiding to me at all. But it gets better. His most recent contribution, which was published in 2015, is a study that was funded by the CDC, the same organization he stole money from in the first place. How can this be? Or this, published in 2014 by the American National Institutes of Health. Clearly, everyone knows where he is. I wonder what he would say if he was put on trial and actually told the truth. Has some deal been quietly made with him that allows him to continue working with the institution he stole from and the government who is supposedly looking for him? Thorson must have his own underground bunker system and a special direct line, because when we rang the university hospital, we were told that no such person works there. All very interesting, don't you think? More and more parents are catching on to this kind of corruption within top governmental institutions, responsible for defining what is vaccine-settled science inside the home run of vaccination. Parents may not understand every bit of science, but they know there are rats in the kitchen. They know the books are being cooked. They know their vaccinated children are unwell. And even worse, they can see that their unvaccinated children have far better health than their older vaccinated children. Last year, a CDC vaccine scientist confessed to cooking the books with four other CDC researchers. Thompson said that they left out statistically significant information in a 2004 article called Age at First Measles Mumps Rubella Vaccination in Children with Autism and School-Matched Control Subjects. They dismissed over 200% higher autism rates in African-American boys within that study. Shortly after his public announcement, Dr. Thompson went silent. He mentions that he received a performance-based award from the CDC after his public statement. He says he wants to be left alone and to focus on his job and his family. He continues to go to work at the CDC, just like Thorson continues to be funded by the CDC. I wonder what happened between his pang of conscience and his current silence. When Paul Offit was asked what he thought of this highly published veteran CDC scientist coming forward as he has, Offit said that Thompson has psychological problems. So now we know that Paul Offit is not only an expert on aluminium's benefits to a growing fetus, but also on the psychology of whistleblowers and anyone else who doesn't agree with him. It seems clear that today's medical inquisitors are on a mission to completely uproot every difference of opinion and threat to their vaccination absolutism. Doctors who see things that make them lose sleep rarely risk everything and speak, because it will hit them in the back pocket. They are also terrified of becoming wakefielded, The fact is that Wakefield was pro-vaccine, and all he did was suggest a possible link between autism and measles vaccines based on clinical case studies and colon biopsies of vaccinated autistic children. But as we remember, any doubts are not allowed to exist. So Wakefield's name was made synonymous with fraud by the pro-vaccine, who continue to manipulate the facts. In the USA, parents are pushed around and treated harshly. Children are kicked out of the office for being non-vaccinated. And this treatment is sanctioned and recommended by doctors like Dr. Paul Offit. Yet in the next breath, under a veil of compassion towards children, Paul Offit ironically used seriously flawed religious thinking to speak his mind in a New York Times article called "What Would Jesus Do About Measles?" In addition to misinterpreting scripture, he said, "Constantine, the first Christian emperor of Rome, passed laws protecting children from abuse and poverty. Christian monasteries became the prototypes of modern-day hospitals, and missionaries brought medicine to the four corners of the earth in Jesus' name." Suddenly, Jesus has some use to Offit, even though he's an admitted atheist. Such a pity, then, that Paul Offit knows so little about history, Jesus, or Catholicism. Offit reveres Constantine because he ordered protection of children. Yet Offit ignored the inconvenient fact that Constantine also ordered his own son Crispus to be killed at the age of 21. Some role model. Is Offit really clueless about the brutal crimes during the Dark Ages that were carried out by Constantine's successors of the Roman Catholic Church? Their ideology was forced upon the masses with the point of a sword. Papal authorities, who were backed by vast sums of stolen money, had full knowledge of this, of the atrocities that were wielded in Jesus' name. If you compare what Jesus said in the Gospels with what papal authorities believed and did, there's no comparison. Jesus would have been furious. An honest look at history would show Paul Offit that his understanding of history is even more limited than his concepts on aluminium. He must be unaware of the real origins of modern-day hospitals, which existed in antiquity in Egypt and India. And over time, they evolved as a pantheistic effort, evidenced today by all the symbols that still represent medicine. As a Christian and an educated physician, Offit's remarks and inappropriate use of scripture are yet a total put-off to me. But back to the battle for the minds, the focus of which is 100% compliance, no questions, and zero dissent. The problem is that pro-vaccine parents whose children suddenly change after a vaccine can see the cracks in the road ahead. They're not stupid. And the more parents and doctors read and realize how deep and numerous the cracks in vaccine logic are, the stronger the backlash gets. Parents are figuring out the toxicity of aluminium. They're figuring out the pertussis vaccination isn't working. We see that 86% of cases of pertussis are fully vaccinated. They're figuring out that flu vaccines actually make you more susceptible to other strains of influenza and higher risk to shedding flu viruses. They're aware of the influx of new strains of bacteria and viruses after the ones that are vaccinated for go down. They're aware that Gardasil reactions and recipients of Gardasil are now more susceptible to other strains than what they were vaccinated for, than the unvaccinated are. MMR, how many vaccines are we supposed to get now for MMR? 3, maybe 4 vaccines in a lifetime. Now, in America, women get all sorts of vaccines during pregnancy, some of them containing mercury and some of them containing aluminium, and sometimes they're given together. But the methods that are used on us are as old as the hills. Don't inform, just scare the crap out of parents. Doctors are told by Dr. Robert Jacobson at Mayo Clinic, and this is taken out of one of his PowerPoint presentations, that doctors should persuade parents rather than inform them or give them any printed information or verbal information. Paul Offit and others now train armies of doctors who study no literature, but just carry out orders and believe with religious fervor in the experts' decrees. They and all mainstream media parrot the same simple one-liners. Your baby could die. Your baby could be crippled by disease. You have to protect the herd. Wakefield is a fraud. There's no autism connection. And lately, vaccines do more good than you could ever understand. But in 2015, the pro-vaccine tossed out a new radical message that live viral vaccines, even the smallpox vaccines, have beneficial effects beyond what you may have ever dreamed. Let us start with measles vaccine, because that was the focus of the 2015 media spin, which involved all levels of USA governmental participation. It all started with a mysterious measles outbreak in Disneyland, with a mysterious index case who mysteriously didn't get sick, but invisibly strolled through Disneyland over a week, mysteriously infecting a whole lot of people right out in the open air. Nobody has ever identified this mysterious index case. Healthcare officials presume that an infected foreigner brought the virus to Disneyland or the accompanying Disneyland Adventure theme park in Anaheim, California, between December 15th and 20th, 2014. This set off a media blitz campaign pulling as many scare the crap out of parents tactics that they could think of. While they sat back and monitored what happened, as this recent doctor's survey in the USA demonstrates, this pretty much shows you what some non-vaccinating parents in the USA are made of. They caved very easily, and the CDC was delighted. But why did they cave? Was it the publicity around headline-hitting study from May of 2015 that I'll be getting into? Whatever the reason, CDC found that more parents accepted vaccines in California and states close to California than the eastern states. So where will the next outbreak start, and how will it be used as a weapon against parents? It could happen right here. From what I understand, Denmark regularly has measles outbreaks, any of which could spin into medico-political maelstrom like nothing you've ever dreamed possible. American doctors said fear was the number one motivating factor in getting parents to accept vaccination. And MMR is the vaccine most rejected by parents in the USA, right alongside with HPV. So let this serve as proof that your fear carries a monetary value. This was the Bloomberg Business Report showing how after the Disneyland outbreak, there was a huge surge in Merck stock value. Use of Merck's vaccine peaks at more than four times normal rates. There's nothing like an outbreak to get parents to vaccinate or to help vaccine sales. But back in the Office of Public Mind Manipulation, several strategies were brought into play, many of them on Facebook or in comments on newspaper articles like Paul Offit's What Would Jesus Do About Measles? The key tactics used by pro-vaccine people whose words had as much subtlety as a chainsaw was to point the finger at parents who don't vaccinate, pillorying them, demonizing them, and using comments from irrational pro-vaccine parents who suddenly thought that unvaccinated children could infect and kill their vaccinated children. Peer group pressure was an effective weapon, and the word flame war would have made the medieval witch burners feel proud. Fear pushed lots of parents to make quick decisions to get vaccinated. Ignorance on the part of non-vaccinating parents has to be part of the formula too. And the more ignorance that exists, the easier it is to create fear and get compliance. Then comes the carefully molded propaganda from the vaccine stakeholders to first magnify the small truth and then warp the facts. So in May of 2015, suddenly the public was told that vaccines had new extra special benefits, which could magically prevent people from dying of other diseases than what they were vaccinated for. The two tools used were unintelligible math and incorrect immunology. With the key vaccine hero, MMR, rushing to the rescue, but with BCG and smallpox tossed in for variety, the public was told that live viral vaccines have wonderful non-specific effects which make long-term death less likely. But then they were told that measles disease is worse than anyone had ever noticed before, in an article that was released in 2015. This article wasn't some unique, spontaneous epiphany. It was part of a carefully orchestrated plan, piggybacking on Disneyland's measles outbreak, Forbes magazine cluster bombs, and it was backed up by legislative action in the United States. The message to parents was that vaccines make children glow with supernatural strength, and that if you don't vaccinate, you don't love your children, and you're a stupid criminal who puts all other glowing, healthy, vaccinated people at risk of dying. So let's look at what lay hidden behind the publicity. But first, we're about one-third of the way through, and I think we could probably just take a short break now, unless you want to do the longer break now.